Hello, this is a football fans podcast by the people behind Celtic Underground. This is being recorded immediately following the 5-0 defeat at home to PSG. All I can say is shit happens. So thanks to everybody who's getting their new music and cover versions and Uncle Tom Copley and all through to the podcast. So we're still doing that. I think it was at Joe Blog City and Derek McLean, whose cover versions were on last week. This week we've got Pete Young with new music from Blue Vale Street, with Electric being played underneath us as we speak. And well, I don't know what I'll have at the end. Anyway, probably a Green Machine or something like that. Anyway, there'll be links to it on the podcast. You want me to stop rambling on, I will now hand you over to Mark Cooper, and then after Mark we will have Brendan Rodgers and possibly, if I can be bothered, the PSG manager. So I'm joined now by Mark Cooper. Mark, how's Argentina today?
Not great today. Not great.
You're going to tell me because I'm in Uruguay or something?
No.
I was just in the flat watching. It was on TV today.
And all today, I was so nervous this happened last year as well. I was so nervous I couldn't eat. And I think it's something about being away, mm-hmm. and like not actually going to a stadium and having that kind of experience of being any sort of involvement.
Yeah.
And so you're just kind of like passively watching it. And also the kind of South American commentary as well is so kind of, they're expecting, they're going to see how Paris Saint-Germain now mm-hmm. are going to perform. And so it's all, everything's kind of given with that perspective. But anyway.
I know how you feel though. It's the same reason I'm finding it more and more difficult to watch your Champions League qualifiers, where a final round away from home.
Yeah.
It's just that, I don't know what it is. Once you're at the game, I mean, today, I say once PSG scored, I relaxed. No, but I think it's that thing.
So did they.
Yeah. I think it's that thing of, well, you're uptight about the possibility of the worst case scenario, and the worst case scenario is Celtic losing a goal, and then once they've lost a goal, well, the worst thing that could happen's happened.
Yeah.
I preface this with two things. When, after a game like today where I expected us to get beat, I'm actually quite defensive of Celtic, because the gulf between us and them is enormous, so I expected us to be beat anyway. So I'm quite protective of the Celtic players, and I'm not wanting to be too critical of them, because the gulf in class is enormous, and it doesn't matter if we'd spent £4 million in a centre-half in the summer, we'd still get beat 4-5-0 by PSG tonight, because two of our goals were caused by our £4 million centre-half. And then, even when I then analyse the game, I'm actually not looking about how PSG were so good when they scored. I'm looking at how, what could we do to make sure that goal doesn't happen next time. So I tend to, you know, I've had a few texts and mates talking about, oh, PSG were great here and great there. You know, the fifth goal, that was just fantastic. And my reply was, Jozo could have done better.
The thing is, like, I can understand that when if it's like 1-0 or 2-0 or something like that, and the teams have more or less the same amount of chances or something fairly similar. But the fact is, even before Paris Saint-Germain scored their first goal, there was a few crosses whizzing across the six-yard box. And I remember thinking, if Joso gets, if that hits Joso's leg or something, that can easily go in, that kind of thing. And then I looked up at a clock and it's like 3 or 4 minutes. And I was thinking, oh, jeez.
Do you know, we were the same. I turned to my brother at 4 minutes and said, there's only 4 minutes going.
Yeah.
And at 14 minutes, I genuinely, if you'd have asked me, I'd have said it's about 30 minutes gone in this game.
Mm-hmm. What I was hoping for, remember Liverpool under Rodgers, when they had that, they had a very good run, obviously in the Champions, almost Championship season, but there's a particular run where they had some big games and like Arsenal went up there when Arsenal were good,
mm-hmm.
and Liverpool put like 2 or 3 goals past them in the first like half hour or something like that. And then when City came to us last year and we started off so well,
mm-hmm.
and it was like a whirlwind. It was almost like when Liverpool came up to us when we had Larsson, and within 3 minutes we're putting balls in a box and Larsson's, you know, shinning a ball into the back of the net, and we've just caught them cold. And I was hoping Paris Saint-Germain up in Glasgow, first game, the players haven't even really played together yet.
Mm-hmm.
I really hope we start off well here. And the players didn't, like, there's a bravery in, basically you have to, at that level, when you have these athletic, agile guys and they press up on you, and the ball goes to our fullbacks, the ball goes to the two centre mid or the three centre midfielders, they have to be able to receive the ball under pressure of one of these
mm-hmm.
Athletic, agile guys that are trying to dispossess them. They have to then kind of consolidate possession, make a bit of space for themselves, and then find the man with a good quality pass. And that has to happen about 4 or 5 times before you've properly got, you know, a control of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And we couldn't do that. And the players, like, you have to be brave not to kind of put up a 20-yard ball up the line.
I think
when you can be dispossessed and you can have Neymar running at goal, if, you know,
I thought it was interesting.
If you're the mug who gets dispossessed.
Your comment there, because Brendan Rodgers was touching on this in the press conference, and actually his quote, which I would say in the 15 months he's been at Celtic would probably be the most critical thing he's ever said about the team: we were playing like under 12s. He just talked about what you said about we weren't holding the ball up. Yeah. When you're under pressure, you have to be able to then play the ball out. That then has to be held up for the team to then come up and support. And we were just giving it away, losing possession, bad passes. We were playing like under 12s. And I thought that was pretty damning from Brendan. That his whole thing before the game was, we're going to press them. I want our players, there's obviously a difference in class, but there's a way to press. But I want them to feel our players breathing down the back of their necks. We played like that in the second half. For half an hour in the second half.
Yeah.
But the first half,
but we stood also up. Also, another thing is that when it actually got to a bit further up the pitch, and say it gets out to Roberts or Sinclair,
mm-hmm.
and say they were getting the ball in a halfway line, and they're carrying a ball, say, 10-15 yards
until the fullback is then thinking, okay, well, I have to make a decision here. I have to kind of go in and try and hold up this guy or dispossess him. You know, hold up so the guy has to pass away or whatever, or after dispossessing.
And at that point, we're then maybe about, you know, about 10, 15 yards into their half or whatever. the amount of times there was a simple inside ball, and for both of them, just a boring, simple ball into either Armstrong or Ncham, who can then switch the ball. But not almost, there's about three times in the first half and about twice in 5 minutes when Sinclair tried to take on the player.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mind someone trying to take on the player, but if the benefit has to outweigh the cost, because the probability is
yep.
you're going to be dispossessed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if everyone's in, if Paris Saint-Germain have a pretty decent defensive structure and no one's out of position, even if you get past that guy, then there's going to be three other players
mm-hmm.
kind of waiting in your way. And so there's no kind of benefit in taking that first one on, because then, you know, like, what you're then going to have to pass it inside to the same player, unless you try and take on the second player and the third player and the fourth player. And not even Barcelona do that. Not even Neymar or Mbappe do that. You see it time and time again. When Neymar gets the ball, he goads the player in. Whoever's trying to tackle him makes the lunge, he does a little layoff, he rolls past the player, Rabiot or Mota or whoever, then just do that little 5 yard pass into Neymar or Mbappe or whatever. You see it all the time. Yeah.
You see us doing it when we're playing domestically.
Yeah.
When we're playing domestically, Scott Sinclair doesn't try to run through three Ross County players.
Yeah.
But for you're spot on, because that was, we were discussing this during the game at the game, that what was annoying us was, in terms of, they'd obviously identified that when we were on the counter attack, that our most dangerous player would be Scott Sinclair. So
yep.
they were doubling up on him. Somebody would come across, you know, somebody would,
yep.
whoever was, can't even remember, he would be up against, and then someone would come across to assist, and Sinclair just ran. Would every time, on the four or five occasions when he got an opportunity with the ball coming to him in their half, he ran straight at two guys. And you're thinking, you won't do this on Saturday against Ross County. You won't run it straight to two guys. To be fair, there was a couple of occasions when you then thought that the likes of someone like Armstrong could be making better use of the space to offer something to Sinclair, which was also compounded. And Roberts, despite what we were doing in the second half, Roberts was doing the same thing in the second half.
Roberts was doing exactly the same. There's a time when
there was one point they were showing him down yep. the line for him yep. to go down the line. And there was one point where he then cut inside to four PSG players. When you're yep. thinking, the guy's showing you down the line and you are 30 yards out. So if you just tap it and run, you're past him.
Yeah.
So you were going to say about one with Rogic?
Well, no, I think that same time, Rogic was just inside.
Uh-huh.
And it's about 35 yards out. And then I think even Roberts then kind of, either he regained the ball or he had another opportunity to pass inside, and he still didn't. And Rodgers is just kind of waiting there, about 35 yards from goal, to have a kind of like shoot, a shot on his left foot, which would be a kind of a good angle for him. Or, you know, he can slip in a ball, or he can just slip it back into Roberts in a 1-2. But there's another time after, say, about 55, 60 minutes.
When Sinclair had a ball on a near touchline for the TV, and he gave a ball into, it's a really boring, simple ball, and he gave it into Ncham, and Ncham switches it.
And then I think, I assume Ralston then made an overlap and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that struck me was, we then had possession in their third for about 40 seconds, a minute or whatever. And we'd kind of like, it would just been a really standard attack. But it hadn't been that he'd been dispossessed and everyone was running back again. Because mm-hmm. you also need to give people a break.
Yeah.
When we've got 25% of the ball, you need to, even defensively, you need to just play boring passes, let everyone get a breather.
Mentally as well as physically get a breather from having to concentrate every split second. I mean, I suppose it gets back to, I think it's the numbers game that writes about once people are playing, they're talking about the English league setup, and once people are playing professional football within any of the four leagues, they've actually got, despite what we may say about, you know, laugh at lower league players, they've got a set, they've got a good standard of ability. They've got a better standard of ability than the majority of people listening to this podcast once they're playing football on that level. And I can't remember the figures, but it's something like under zero pressure, a centre half playing in the fourth tier of English football has the same pass completion rate as a centre half in the top tier of English football. The point uh-huh. being, and they have the same control. The point being, they can control the ball and they can pass the ball. That technical yep. aspect of their game, where it then starts to fall apart, is when they play in a game. And sometimes it's not even just they've got less time in the ball. It's when they're playing in a higher pressure game that the mental side of things kick in. And even with the same amount of time on the ball as they might have in a Doncaster against...
Yeah.
Whoever, you know, Torquay yeah. game, the minute they're playing in a Doncaster against Arsenal game, they might still have 4 seconds on the ball, but their pass completion rate will go down because the mental aspect of playing in that game is where they start to suffer. And to be fair to our players, they then start making mistakes about bad choices because the level of mental challenge has gone up in the game.
Yeah, and also these guys read people's bodies as they're playing a ball and can telegraph a ball and anticipate it, intercept it. Like just watching the kind of movement off a ball, but even just a movement of how they actually move in kind of like loose ball challenges and stuff like that. Like sometimes when there was our guys like going in for kind of 50-50 balls against even like Neymar mm-hmm. and there's another guy who I surprised came out with the ball, but it was just the way they kind of positioned their feet and their body to not
do what we would expect.
Yeah, and to kind of maybe they're already anticipating that what happens here is it's going to ricochet, but it's going to be ricocheting over there somewhere. So even if Scott Brown and Neymar went in for a challenge and it kind of just went off in a loose ball, Neymar was already off.
Yeah.
And you see that with like Suarez all the time. Like even when Suarez himself is dribbling, he's the most like inelegant guy. Like half the time he's been like dispossessed as he's going past players, but he's already read that it's going to ricochet off his foot, the defender's foot, and his foot again, and he already knows more or less where.
Do you know, there was a bit in the first half that perfectly encapsulates what you said, and bear with me while I explain yeah. this point, because I'm about to talk about table tennis for a minute. This Matthew Saeed books, the guy Matthew Saeed, who writes for the Times, used to be a British table tennis player, wrote a book called Bounce. And in Bounce, he's talking about, it's all to do with the 10,000 hours of purposeful practice. And he talks about when he was a junior going away with a British table tennis team. And you remember Desmond Douglas, younger people won't, but remember Desmond Douglas was our top table tennis player about 30 years ago, right? This guy from inner London was our top table tennis player.
Okay.
And so the perception, he was brilliant reaction times. So the perception was he had great reaction times.
Uh-huh.
And so they brought in this machine where lights, you know, lights lit up and you had to press the buttons as the lights lit up.
And yeah.
So the thing came in and everybody expected Desmond Douglas would romp this competition and everything. And he came last.
Yeah.
And at the time, well, they just dismissed the idea that it was to do with practicing people's reaction and movement, right?
Yeah.
So at the time, the British table tennis team said, well, this is obviously rubbish, and ditched it. Matthew Saeed then makes the point of, that's because they had it wrong, because they thought Desmond Douglas's skill set was his reaction time. His skill set, the reason he was such a good table tennis player, because he could read the body language, the body of the opponent, so that he could spot what the opponent, where the opponent was going to hit the table tennis ball a fraction of a second quicker than somebody else could read him, right?
Yeah.
So, giving all that context, there was a point in the first half where the ball came down to, I can't even remember who it was, of PSG. The ball was in the air from their keeper, was played it up.
Yeah.
And Armstrong was coming in to challenge, and the guy just moved a movement, and Armstrong moved to Armstrong's left, and the guy took the controlled the ball and moved to Armstrong's right. And I thought, when people talk about the problem Celtic have got is they're better than everybody else domestically, so the, and then I immediately thought of that comment about Matty Said and Desmond Douglas, and it's about reading your opponent, and so you know what the opponent's going to do. Armstrong plays domestically against people who, in that situation, they're quality players.
Yeah,
they can control a ball, but their quality is only to a certain level, that when they control the ball, they have to move to Armstrong's left.
Yeah.
So the whole body signal of everything that's happening, Armstrong's muscle memory, Armstrong's experience of playing football, is that ball coming in, the guy's going to get it before Armstrong can get to the guy, but the guy won't have full control of it, and it's going to have to turn to his left to fully control the ball, and Armstrong can nip in and take it away. And domestically, that's fantastic. At this level, the guy can do the opposite of what Armstrong's whole experience in football is. So your point about it's what you're used to, it's this, it's reading the slight, you know, pros always talk about a guy dipping his shoulder and turning. It's reading those signs and knowing subconsciously, because you know these players don't have time to consciously think the whole thing through. It's subconsciously thinking, your body just switches on that he's going to do that. So Armstrong automatically puts his weight on his left hand side, ready to nip in and take the ball off a guy's toe.
Yeah.
And that's the challenge. And it's interesting you see that, because actually, I just, it summarised it perfectly for me, this bit. And getting back to Armstrong, I actually wasn't surprised that Rogic came on for Armstrong, because I thought Armstrong was just chasing shadows.
Yeah.
And he was just arriving at the play a second after the ball had gone. And wasn't supporting. Yeah. He was doing neither the support of Sinclair and Roberts, nor was he doing the defensive duties.
Armstrong's a good player, but he's the type of player that needs to be in like 15 games in a row, and he's been playing well in like 12 or 13 of them, and he's really kind of, he's really in a rhythm. Whereas there's other players who are, Rogic is more kind of like, he's more naturally gifted. He might not be as athletic, might not be able to complete a bleep test.
Yeah.
But if both of them haven't been playing for 4 weeks and you throw them both a ball, Rogic naturally is going to be able to take in that ball a lot better and retain that ball under pressure. Now, he might, he wouldn't have been able to close down, they have most of the ball. And so a lot of our play, like when we were playing Barcelona and we were doing well against Barcelona, both home and away, a lot of it was because our midfielders were closing down everything, and they tactically knew like Lennon's system like really well, like this is what we're going to do. Like they were like 2-3 years into training with Lennon, and they kind of understood his tactics of what we're going to do when we go away to these good teams. And people like Ledley and Kyle and Brown just closed down all of the space in front of our back four. And they were putting in balls into Kelvin Wilson and Ambrose, who were just heading everything away. They didn't actually have that many chances. Well, they probably did, but it wasn't,
when we were beating 2-1 over there,
mm-hmm.
it wasn't a surprise to Celtic fans that we were really going to give them a game. I remember being in the pub in Glasgow before the game, and half the people thought we were going to win.
Mm-hmm.
Like, genuinely, I remember being around the table, and like, all around the table, we'd been to the away game. And we're thinking, if we replicate what we did in the Nou Camp, and we have a little bit more energy, and we, you know, get a few more shots on goal, we can do this. And we don't yet have that. I know we're playing more kind of expansive football and whatever, but we don't have that kind of defensive discipline that the previous team did have. We might be more like, we might go through the phases of play, well, not tonight, but, and we might be better in possession, but in terms of closing down space, I don't think we're close to that kind of Wanyama, Kaya, Ledley, Brown kind of block in closing down the space. Maybe with the ball we're better.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the thing about football is you need, the whole thing about Rodgers' structure is like passing options.
Yeah,
you have Brown coming in as this like pivot guy. He's always Brown on the TV in Argentina. They call him the friend of everyone,
right?
Because he's always just offering himself as a passing option.
Mm-hmm.
He's, if anyone's in need, you always have that pivot guy.
Yeah,
who's just always an extra passing option.
Yeah, it's what Lennon and Lambert were good at. They just always were there for somebody to have a ball to make, and for me that was our biggest challenge in the first half tonight. Was it wasn't just, I mean, we've talked about Sinclair running into people and Roberts running into people, and but part of that for me was also compounded by they weren't being offered passing options. People because being offered, not on occasions, because offering passing options means moving, and I think people were fearful. I think people were fearful of moving out of where they thought their space was. I'm not going to move out of my space. And one of the few times that we actually did that was their first goal.
Yeah.
When, and this is one of the other things that frustrates me slightly about referees thinking through having game knowledge. That was a foul.
Yeah,
he played advantage for 2 seconds, 3 seconds. The point being,
do you think he? I haven't seen any replay at all. Do you think he played advantage?
Well,
or do you think he just didn't give it?
At the game, my perception,
I don't know either way.
Well, at the game, my perception was he played advantage, but we lost the advantage so quickly that he could have pulled it back, and actually, it was one of the few occasions where our players had been brave and gone beyond the ball. Which compounded the problem for Ralston being caught. I mean, you know, you could say Ralston was caught for pace with Neymar going past him. Most fullbacks in the world would be caught for pace with Neymar. But it was compounded by the fact that we were, for once, we were moving beyond the ball.
Yeah.
And this is my point about referees. I think referees sometimes, I've seen it in European competition before with us, need to have a bit of game knowledge of PSG are up here, and Celtic are down here in ability. So in those types of instances, there is no advantage to Celtic. The advantage to Celtic is to give the foul.
Yeah.
Most times. Not to have one of Celtic midfielders retain, be in possession of the ball with four PSG players around him. That is no advantage to us.
Well, there was a preposterous one at the end when Ncham had the ball, and he'd been fouled, and the referee was definitely playing on because he's doing the motions with his arm, and Ncham had the ball and he was literally hopping up and down.
Yeah,
with the ball.
Couldn't
he couldn't walk.
He couldn't walk. And I'm thinking, it's a foul.
I'm absolutely screaming. Yeah.
That guy can't walk. There is zero advantage to us for a guy who can't walk to have the ball.
To be honest, we'd have lost anyway, but the referee was poor. Like, after about 10 minutes, there's one time when we were
moving forward with the ball. One of the few times we were going forward with the ball in the first 15 minutes, and the referee intercepted our pass.
Yeah.
It was a pass going from the centre of midfield out left.
It was Armstrong pass.
Very attacking pass, yeah.
It gets back to one of my frustrations when Scottish refs, Willie Collum in particular, gets in the way. I often think that was the only, there was only two options on for the Celtic player.
Uh-huh.
So if you could, if you knew anything about football, you knew you were standing in the way of one of the two options. So that shows to me a lack of understanding of the game. There was the, that was the only pass on for Armstrong.
Yeah.
And the referee went in, he did a better block than the PSG player.
Aye.
So talk me, so the first goal, again, so my perception is we should have had a free kick, we're beyond the ball. They then break up the park, and well, they just got £400 million worth of talent up the other end of the park, so yeah. So that's why they score.
Yeah, as you say, like, if you're being ultra critical, you could say that, like, as the ball goes, I think that's one where it goes over Ralston and it goes into Neymar, isn't it?
Yeah, because Ralston tried to give him a wee tug as he went into the box.
And you could say he's maybe slightly like inflexible on a turn or something, or he's like surprised Neymar's coming and making that run in behind him. But to be honest, as you say, like, people can say, we shouldn't have played Ralston, an 18-year-old. But Gamboa would have made the same mistake.
Gamboa, Lustig or Ralston, all three of them would pretty much the same thing would have happened.
Yeah. Like,
there was a bit,
like, who do you want though? Like, Javi Zanetti there or something, like, you know.
There was a bit with 5 minutes to go where there was a diagonal ball played across, and I think Lustig had a 10-yard start on Neymar and was nearly caught out.
Yeah.
You know, so, because I was having a bit of an argument with the guy next to me where he was saying, see, that's what happens if you don't sign a centre-half. And I'm saying, the point I was trying to make to him was, in the current football inflation world, a £4 million centre-half is the same ability. Simonovic and Boyata are the standard of player that we would get for £4 million.
Yeah.
We would still have lost that goal if we'd have spent £4 million on a centre-half.
Yeah.
In fact, probably the best centre-half in our club, I felt, was culpable for a minimum two of their goals. Certainly the third goal. But he had a lobotomy on the third one. Anyway, so there's the first goal. Second,
there was just going on to the centre back thing. I did think, I was saying this to my brother earlier on tonight, this wasn't the major problem with us in the game, but it was quite noticeable, I thought, that when it came over to Simunovic on the left hand side, he's not comfortable passing with his left foot.
No.
And so quite often, like, unless there's a pass completely on his right foot that he could give, quite often it was being recycled, you know, back across the back line, then it's coming back to Simunovic, and again, you know, then Paris Saint-Germain were completely, you know, in their shape, and it wasn't on again, and he's like passing it back across the loose. And I kind of felt sorry for him, because, you know, it's not his fault. He's been playing on the left side of defence. But I did think it was noticeable that, you know, like, if you did have a left-footed centre-back who could pass a ball,
mm-hmm.
that would be an improvement.
I thought in the first half as well, the thing is, because I actually sent a text to someone at half-time saying, the one thing I would say is Ralston's certainly not been any worse than Kieran Tierney, because I thought Kieran Tierney was getting quite a bit of a run around in the first 20 minutes in particular. They were getting him behind him.
To be honest I can't remember, to be honest, if I...
Well,
there's two times where he did quite nice body checks and got away with it.
Beginning of the second half.
And it was that kind of grey area. It's almost like that kind of, like, slightly cynical Italian Uruguayan defender where they're turning,
uh-huh.
but
it's they've body checked the guy, but they're turning it at the same time, so they're kind of getting a bit of a let out.
So second goal, I can't really remember the second goal.
I can't.
They scored, went into the roof of the net. That's about all I can remember.
It was Mbappe. Was it Mbappe? Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
To be honest, I can't remember. I haven't seen. I couldn't watch any of the the halftime kind of analysis or anything like that, or even a replay. So I was just kind of pacing around the room.
Do you know the I was actually, because it got to about, did Mbappe score at maybe like 30, 32 minutes or something?
Something like that.
Because I was actually thinking, do you know what? Despite the fact that we've not been at this, if we can keep it to 1-0, if we can go for another 15 minutes, keep it to 1-0 till half time, Brendan goes in, has a word with him, we've still got a chance of being able to get something out of this game. That was the wrong thought to have in my head, because they then scored 2 goals. So that was the second. Third goal, right? Can you explain to me what the hell was going through Simonovic's head?
It was so. Now I don't know. Did he pull him before the ball was played? Because if he pulled him after that ball was played, it was absolutely ridiculous. Because the ball was about 40 feet in the air.
Yeah.
There was no way, like, anyone was heading that near the goal.
Well, the timing of the guy going down. Because remember, it all sort of happens in slow motion. The cross goes in, you're looking across, it's going miles over, and then you just think, he's just that guy. And then if he gives a penalty, you think, yeah, it's a Stonewall penalty, because he's just been a funny. I just couldn't. I mean, even if he did it as the cross was about to come in, so he didn't get to see, he was still being a bloody idiot.
Yeah.
And just go and challenge the guy instead of just trying to foul him.
Yeah, it seems so. Yeah.
And then the penalty.
To be honest, I'd need to see it again, because it seems so ridiculous. What did you think of Paris Saint-Germain, like, being there in the stadium? Like, how good were they?
It's difficult, because I think we stood off them far too much in the first half, and then the second half, when we were in their faces and patently had been told at half time to be in their faces and were coming in behind them, you don't really know whether
they're 3-0 up.
So
they were, the first 20 minutes you could see they just kind of like lowered their intensity completely. I thought the big boy, what's it, Rabiot, there's like Morta, who had a good game, and also Rabiot, the tall boy in centre midfield with the hair.
Yep.
He was very good.
Neymar, although Neymar is a bit of a tube, like, he is a very good player.
Absolutely.
Like, just his touches and his movement, he is an exceptional player.
I actually think they will do well against teams who come at them.
Yeah.
Because the pace of movement that they've got in the front, they just need a fraction, you know, getting back to Ralston, and yeah, maybe could have turned quicker, but you're playing against a guy who's exceptionally quick feet, quick brain, and he's facing the goal and you're facing the opposite way, and you have to turn, and that's always going to give him a half second head start against even the fastest fullbacks. The thing that, being at the ground, the thing that compounded the down feeling in the fans after the penalty was the prick who came on the park. Now, he came on. Now, I'm not saying he came out of the Green Brigade section, because I couldn't tell you where he came from. I just know he came from roughly that bit in that general corner and managed to run to the halfway line.
Uh-huh.
And then you're watching him running on thinking, he's going to go for one of the PSG players. And all the stupid. And we pay tens of thousands of pounds for the police, and the police are going, oh dear, there's a guy in, there's all this publicity before the game about there'll be armed police at the ground because with all the terrorist stuff, there's a, well, one of the fuckers should have got their gun out and shot him. But no, I don't know what the fuck they were doing. They're busy filming the Green Brigade patently rather than, and the stewards, you know, it is the issue of, you know, you and I could outrun the stewards, most stewards by the look of them. The guy actually was only caught because he slipped and fell on his arse.
Cavani started, he like burst out giggling. Because TV didn't show, if this was South America, TV cameras would be straight on the guy.
Aye.
But this being Britain, the only reason I knew someone was on the pitch is because they were showing anything but what was happening. It was, that's weird, something must be happening on the pitch. And the Argentinian commentators didn't have a clue.
Ah, because they're in the studio, they're getting the feature in the studio.
Yeah, exactly. And it just shows a camera on, like, Cavani, and he just bursts out laughing.
Yeah, because the guy goes to kick whoever it was, I think it was Mbappe, and misses him. I mean, Mbappe's standing still. He goes to kick him. I mean, you know, let's be serious for a minute. The possible consequences for us are a shut stand or a closed door game because a guy got on the park, ran half the length of the pitch and tried to attack a PSG player, right? You then look at, we pay thousands of pounds to the police for a game and we pay for all this stewarding and there's all this chat about extra security because of terrorism levels and all that. Well, the guy could have had a knife on him. You know, if you want to get serious for a second, the guy gets all the way there only because he's a wee dick. Does he has a fresh air kick trying, because Mbappe doesn't really move out of the way. He tries to kick him, misses, then goes to run off the pitch, slips, and the steward gets him. If he did a knife, he'd have been able to go after.
Yeah.
Because nobody's doing it. The referee's sort of standing watching him. Scott Sinclair was the nearest one. I'm thinking to myself, he's going to go for the PSG player. Hopefully Sinclair's going to go forward and try and stop him here. Because he's not going to go for a Celtic player. That's what's going through my mind. But it put a real downer. Because, the crowd acted in the right. I mean, the crowd are going mental. You know, really booing him. Because we all know that that's a really serious potential issue for us. And it put a real downer. It was straight after the third goal and put a real downer on things.
Another weird thing about it was that it seemed to me, at least just watching on TV, it seemed to be completely unprovoked. Like, Mbappe hadn't done anything.
Yeah.
It was a like completely legitimate penalty. And, you know, there wasn't even that much antagonism in the game at that point.
I've seen a picture of the guy on Twitter. He's maybe just a young guy who, you know, he's not experienced Celtic getting beaten at home by a team like that before. And can he cope with it?
Anyway.
That sort of put a downer on it. Second half, we come out. And first 2 minutes, we have a couple of challenges where we pretty much go through a PSG player. And there was one bit in particular about 3 or 4 minutes into the second half where Tony Ralston dealt with Neymar. And was actually laughing in his face. Neymar had obviously said something to him, and Ralston's laughing in his face, and that lifted the whole atmosphere of the ground for the next 25 minutes.
Yeah, the TV show, you probably won't have seen it, but a TV showed him kind of Ralston looking at the fans and kind of like,
I did, you know, sort of like
roaring, kind of.
So what were your thoughts?
You did kind of feel that, like even on TV for the like 25 minutes afterwards. Like the first 25 minutes of the second half, the atmosphere was really good. It was really impressive. The commentators here were like commenting on it for a team to be 3-0 down and for a stadium to be kind of, you know, rocking. And we were like, they lowered the intensity and, you know, were quite relaxed at that point. But, you know, we were playing a little bit better. A bit of a play was going through Rodric and we're kind of like building up the attacks a wee bit.
I felt the players were then doing what we've said that we were critical of them. They were doing, they were moving into space and offering people options on the ball.
Yeah.
What did you think of Ralston in general?
He was decent on the ball. It's difficult because, like, he's against... If that's a 27-year-old, you know, defender who's played for Scotland like 80 times or whatever,
yeah,
and he gets done in that ball over top for Neymar,
mm-hmm,
you would be critical of that. You'd be critical of an international defender. Even though we said, you know, Lustig and Gamboa would have been done on that, yeah, ball. Still, if, you know, if we were kind of, you know, trying to be an elite team... So then you have to kind of take it into context. So, you know, an 18-year-old, whatever. Thought he was fine on the ball.
The reason I ask is because I was trying to compare him with Ralston, who Kieran Tierney, who obviously is the sweetheart of the support. And I was thinking, he's not doing any worse. In fact, there was a bit in the second half where a ball came over to the far post. And Tierney is backpedalling, so you're not 100% sure who's behind him. And he nodded it back into the danger zone. And I couldn't believe he'd done that, because they then had a chance. And I couldn't believe he'd done that, because as a defender, you then... And there was two occasions where Ralston then, shortly after that, did exactly what I thought Tierney should have done, which is, ball's coming in, he's backpedalling. He just knocked out for a corner.
Yeah,
we can, because we practice set pieces all day long. So, you know, I was comparing them across because I was just thinking about the aspect of, I am absolutely desperate for our young players that we've got coming through the academy, like Ralston. We've obviously got Tierney, Calvin Miller, Connor Hazard, the goalkeeper, Henderson, Liam Henderson's wee brother, McEnroy, Aitchison, Johnson. I'm desperate for all these players to make it. And, and I know that Brendan is, you know, it's the reason why Brendan didn't sign a left, or let Izaguirre go and didn't sign a left back, because his perception is, if Calvin Miller gets first team football, he'll be, in 12 to 18 months time, he'll be a better player than Izaguirre will be in 12 months time. But if you keep Izaguirre, Calvin Miller will never be the player he could be, so we've got to let these players flourish. So, getting back to my biasness, I'm just desperate for them to succeed.
Yeah.
And I look at that, and I look at Ralston, and I think, if he switched on, he'll have learned a lot from playing in that game.
Yeah, yeah. My brother loved his kind of antagonism towards Neymar. The fact that he wasn't in awe of a guy, you know, during a game of one of the best, what, 3-4 players in the world, and that he was, you know, getting pretty close to him, making a few challenges, even conceding fouls, but kind of, you know, letting him know that he was in a game. There was one point when, which I haven't mentioned, when he made that run, and it was... To be honest, it probably wasn't a foul or penalty, but it wasn't that far away. Like, he was quite intricate. It could have been lucky or whatever, or he anticipated, you know, the way the ricochet would have gone or whatever. But it was a good run. It's a good run, you know, especially for an 18-year-old boy, a fullback. So, yeah, that was a positive. That was, you know, one of our more attacking moments, to be honest.
Then about I cursed it, although I don't believe in such things. About 10 minutes to go, I was saying to my brother, do you know, we played really well second half.
Yeah.
I just hope we don't do that thing of, we put so much effort in that in the last 5 minutes we are knackered and they scored two goals. The last 5 minutes we were knackered, made mistakes, and they scored two goals.
Lustig was a little bit unlucky, because I think Gordon gets a hand to it and it slightly deflects it. And for the fifth goal, I can't remember the lead up to a fifth goal, but the pass by Lo Celso and the header by Cavani were exceptional.
I may have been overly harsh, because at the game I was very critical of Simonovic for letting a ball go over his head and a guy getting a header in from that angle. My mate, who's a Rangers fan, sent me a text saying the ball for the fifth goal was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah,
maybe
he's a very nice player, that boy, actually. Yeah, well, the thing is that as everyone's been saying since the draw is made, the Anderlecht away game's the biggest game. Absolutely. Of the group.
We that's our next game. We go there and get a point. We're favourites for third place.
Yeah.
It's more or less, unless they do something really unexpected, it is more or less a knockout round between us and Anderlecht to play European football after Christmas.
If we win over there, I think we've got third place.
Yeah. Because they
and if we draw and yeah.
They need to come to Celtic Park and beat us by more than we've beaten them over there.
Yeah.
And if we've got the belief in the players, then there's no reason why we can't. Now, the big thing for me is 10 plus years ago, AC Milan, Barcelona, Manchester United came to Celtic Park and we could win.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Barcelona, PSG, the sort of elite 8 to 10 teams, if they come to Celtic Park, we're just not wanting to do it. But I can see that across all Champions League groups for the third and fourth place teams.
Yeah.
Is it just me, or have the sort of top 10 clubs, have they moved much further away from the bottom, our level of club?
This is something that people haven't really been talking about. And maybe they have in Europe, maybe kind of when people kind of looking at kind of the elite football, but generally at Scottish kind of media when they're talking about Celtic in Europe and the home record and we're so good at home, blah blah blah, is that football is a lot different to how it was under Strachan. Mm-hmm. About 10 years ago. Now I think
there's definitely the concentration in wealth has got bigger and more stark. I think the refereeing as well has slightly become more strict.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the offside rule as well
has changed football quite a bit. That you get players going into a centre that are completely offside for the whole phase of the whole move. Yeah. And as long as you know, by the time the ball goes in, which when the ball is crossed in or something, they will probably be onside, then you know they are onside.
If they're good at movement, all they need to do if the play's then gone down either wing.
Yeah.
All they need to do is just take one or two steps back.
Exactly.
There'll be a fullback who's gone with the guy down the wing, and they're onside.
Yeah. And you see it. You see even what's the game in a weekend? Liverpool City. You quite often see the complete blowouts in football now, even between the very biggest teams.
Mm-hmm.
You saw it last season with Paris Saint-Germain home and away against Barcelona.
Mm-hmm.
You get four goals difference in each game.
Yeah.
You get four goals in a game on Saturday between City and Arsenal. You get it City and Liverpool, so you get it with Arsenal every time they go up to one of the big teams. It happens very frequently now.
Mm-hmm.
I've mentioned, you know, the concentration of wealth and the offside rule and the refereeing. There's probably other factors as well that I can't think of off the top of my head, but it is noticeable. There's also something that
I was watching a Champions League final with a big group of friends. We're having a conversation just about European football, and we're looking at the Real Madrid bench, and it used to be that, say Real Madrid are playing say the third best team in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
Say they're playing against Fiorentina, and it used to be that Real Madrid would have a better team than Fiorentina. Mm-hmm. But Fiorentina would have Rui Costa and Batistuta as their number 9 and number 10.
Mm-hmm.
Or the other way around. Whereas now the equivalent of say Rui Costa is James Rodriguez.
Mm-hmm.
And he's on the bench. The Real Madrid bench, say 15 years ago, 10 years ago, would not have had, say, one of the top 7-8 best playmakers in the world. They would have had a pretty good Spanish player, and that's it. And now you're getting, so James Rodriguez, now we're going to see him in a couple of weeks' time, because now he's probably going to be on the Bayern Munich bench.
Yep.
And they've given Douglas Costa to Juventus, and the other guy, Coleman's gone to... These kind of elite players are just kind of being circulated amongst the elite teams.
Yeah.
And no one else can really afford to buy out their, you know, pay the transfer fees, pay their wages. And so they are concentrating these players in a way that the kind of like second level, the Fiorentina, the Marseille, maybe we're not at that kind of level, we're probably on a level below, but you know, like the team that would have had the Batistuta or Costa.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you do want to include us, Larsson.
Yeah, in the
10-15 years ago, we had Larsson and, you know, yeah, Petrov and
yeah, because the 10-15 years ago, Man United paid a top player 50-60 grand a week, and we pay our top player 25 grand a week. So the guys who are sitting on the Man United bench are on 20-25 grand a week. So you actually could then play for the same money, you can get first team football. It's at the next tier of club down, but you're playing first team football and you're winning stuff and you're getting the same salary you'll get at Man United. And so we can then play Man United with someone like Henrik Larsson and Chris Sutton and John Hartson, because we could pay them, and the differential between what they would get in England is the same. Now, you're point spot on, because not only are they buying Mbappe and Neymar at 400 million quid, and putting these guys on hundreds of thousands of pounds a week, but the guy who 10 years ago would have then been at the second tier of the club, he's also on 100 grand a week to sit on the bench.
Yeah. Well,
and the team that would play as a first team player would be putting on 50 grand a week, so he's not going to take a 50% pay cut to play football.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Pastore and Di Maria were injured.
Yeah.
And you probably wouldn't have even noticed it on the bench, because the bench probably had other players who are all probably getting about 150 grand a week.
Yeah.
Like they brought on Lo Celso, the guy who then crossed in that ball, who won't be on that because he's just come from Argentina, but you know, it is of that level of these kind of, you know, of a similar player but just earlier on in his career. What happens then is then that the UEFA Cup teams or the Europa League teams, they're all the same level.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, sometimes when people are talking about it and like Celtic, if Celtic get in there, we can win it. It's like, yeah, but Celtic at the very top do have a chance.
Mm-hmm.
But there's probably 30 other teams in there who are as good as us. Like, it's a complete, like, you look at these games and it's like Marseille versus Ajax and Bayer Leverkusen versus, you know, Valencia and whatever. It's a really good level.
It's the point I keep making. You look at, I noticed it last year in particular, looking at the teams who are in the last 32 of the Europa League.
Uh-huh.
It was all the teams who were pots 2, 3 and 4 of Champions League football 10, 12 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And now the last 32 Europa League. And the problem that European football's got, you can see it at the moment. You've got, what was it, 3 out of the 5 teams that we could have played in the final qualifier for the Champions League were the same 3 out of 5 teams that we could have played in last year's qualifier, because what's happening is teams like us are getting into the Champions League, so we are getting, you know, our turnover this year will be 65 to 70 million pounds better than the second best team in Scotland. So that means we'll win the league again and we'll get Champions League football next season.
Spoiler alert.
But we'll win the league. Very good chance of getting Champions League football next season. Again, £60 to £70 million more than the second best team in Scotland in turnover, which means we win the league again. But that which is fine for us domestically, the problem then is when we get into this level, we are then hitting pot, and the way that they've changed the pots around with pot one and pot two, we now have a very good chance that both the pot one and the pot two team that we face. Well, you had the situation, we could have been fortunate and had a group where our pot one team had a lower coefficient than us. Or no, yeah. Not a lower coefficient.
Yeah.
Sparta and Moscow,
Moscow
have a lower coefficient than us, half of ours. So we could have had a good fortune. Instead, we had the situation where we get PSG and Bayern Munich in pots one and two. Last season, we had Barcelona and Man City as pots one and two. And these are the elite teams that we've just discussed who are sitting on as we just talked about. It's not just that they can afford the elite players. I suppose if you then take it domestically, an Aberdeen fan listening to this would say, so what you're saying is it's a bit like you signing Johnny Hayes and he can't even get on your bench tonight, when Johnny Hayes is head and shoulders the best player in the SPL last season out with Celtic.
The difference between me and the Aberdeen fan
is that I believe we can win the European Cup.
I'm still ambitious.
I don't know if we can win the European Cup. Well, I think we can win the Europa League.
I think we can win a Europa League, yeah.
The whole thing about Celtic is that we have to dream. And, okay, so Mourinho's Porto team, they weren't necessarily the best team in Europe. They were one of, say, 15 clubs in Europe who were about at that level. And we went that far away. We were more or less there as well.
Yeah.
It's probably like us, Porto, Lyon, the best three teams in England, like Arsenal, United, blah, 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 and so on. But they got a very good draw.
Yes.
They did well. They did well beating United, and then they got a very good draw. I remember when Strachan Celtic team, when we went away to Copenhagen, and we needed to win that game to become top of the group that Man United was in, and we lost that game.
We should have
and
won.
No one really, and we should have won. And no one really cared. Except afterwards we got either Milan or Barcelona, I can't remember which one.
And whichever one it was, the 2 years that we got both teams, they then both went on to win the European Cup that year. Anyway, so we didn't win that group, but Man United did win that group that we should have won. They got Lille in the round after.
Yeah.
In the last eight, they got a Roma team that was absolutely hopeless, and they beat 7-0 or 7-1 at home. And then they're in the semi-finals. We would have beaten that Lille team, and we would have had a half decent chance of beating that hopeless Roma team that had scraped into the quarterfinals. And our very mediocre Celtic team that year, which wasn't a good team.
No.
It wasn't as talented as this team, with a lucky draw, could have got to a semi-final. And that's what you need. You need, when everything's peaking under a Martin O'Neill season, or now with a kind of Brendan Rodgers cycle, when we're getting to the end of that cycle and Rodgers is about to go away somewhere and all of our players are coming to the peak, we need a lucky draw.
I mean, that's my whole point about what we needed in the Champions League. My thoughts were, as long as we've got a chance of finishing third, which is what we've got with Anderlecht, if we can finish third and then get the right draw in the Europa League, it's not unreasonable to think that we could get quarter-final, semi-finals, Europa League, or better. But the other thing that I was going to say about this massive differential now between us and the elite clubs is that's part of the reason why I'm so desperate for our youngsters to succeed.
Yeah.
Because we, a £3-4 million centre half is not going to change our team. Boyata and Simonovic are £3-4 million centre halves in European football. And so for me, the only way that we've got a chance of bridging that gap is if we can. They're human beings, right? Let's not be too philosophical about it. They're human beings, right? They're just guys with 11, with two legs, 2 feet, two arms, two hands,
yeah,
a head and their shoulders, who have developed their skill set to a level beyond ours, right? So I don't think I'm being too silly when I think to myself there is no reason why. One of my most hated phrases is when a Scottish team gets knocked out of Europe and you'll hear them say, but of course they're technically superior to our players. Why? There is no reason for their players to be technically superior to our players. None at all. There is no reason why if we get our coaching structure correctly that we cannot bring through some really good quality first team quality able to play at European football standard players, and then if we've got £30 million from playing European football, we can be, I think this actually was Brendan's plan in the transfer window, we can be a bit more selective, and if we've got £12 million to spend, we spend it on two players and to be fair, I think that's actually what Brendan's plan was. My understanding on the centre half thing was that Brendan before the transfer window said that he wanted his two players he wanted were Paddy Roberts and Incham were the two players he wanted, and Paddy Roberts we couldn't get, so we then went for a centre half whose name escapes me.
The boy who's gone to Ajax?
Yeah, Maximilian Robber, who was at Rapid Vienna, who was 19, and we offered €7 million, I think it was. We were in discussions about €7 million. And then Man City come along and say, Paddy Roberts then comes along and says, I've changed my mind. Because his agent had told Celtic that he had no interest in coming back to Celtic because he'd done everything. His agent then comes back and says, I quite fancy coming to Celtic. Celtic go and speak to Man City. It's £10 million for Patrick Roberts. We agree £10 million with Man City for Patrick Roberts. Or I think it was €10 million, actually. We agree that with Man City. And Man City say, we changed our mind and we want to loan him. But we'd spent £4.5 million on Incham, which with add-ons, I believe, is going to go to six. We'd committed €10 million, so £8 million on Roberts. So £14
million. Or £10 million.
Or whatever it was. But somewhere in the region of £14 to £16 million had been committed to those two players. Suddenly the money then gets freed up for Roberts. And the guy, Maximilian Robber, although I understand that we were a wee bit nervous about spending £7 million on a guy who's 19, because that means he's basically had one good season, he'd gone to Ajax. We then go and find Coetzee. He's then got a bone in his foot, which has been broken for over a year and hasn't fused. And then we've got a week left in the transfer window. We have a tentative inquiry about Denier, who says, well, you've come to me with 2 days left in the transfer window. I'm not your first choice. I'm going to go to Galatasaray. Brendan then takes the attitude of, well, I don't want to just have a filler in the squad for the sake of it. No signing's better than a bad signing. And that's how we end up with no centre-half. But that makes sense. He had a £10-12 million budget, and he wanted to spend it on two players who would make the difference, because you've got another transfer window in January where you can buy another player. You've got another transfer window next summer, if we've got stuff in, where you could buy another two of the better quality players. And that's why I'm so desperate for our youngsters to come through, because if we can then get Ralston and Miller as a suitable backup to Tierney, and McEnroy, who is 2 weeks into his 17th year as the standout player in our under-20s, and Aitchison is 18 months away from, he's just needs physical development, and Johnson just needs a bit of physical development, and Connor Hazard, 6'5", and already is on a par, is better than Gordon with his feet, and is on a par with Gordon as a shop stopper. You're starting to look like, if that's the quality, I'm desperate for that to be the case, because it's starting to look like, right, okay, because if they can come through and be first team players, and you've got £10 million to spend, you only buy two players with the £10 million and you're doing something different, you're doing something substantial to the team.
Yeah. Well, that was always our problem before, that we're basically buying £2.5 million players for every position.
Yep.
For about 15 to 16 players. And then you have a lot of Jost Højvelds and Leuvens quality players. And that's what you are.
Yeah.
You're that level team.
Yeah, so, you know, my mate always makes the point. Now, it's whether it would be the case or not, but he always made the point. Was Chad Urie so significantly better than Paul Caddis that he was worth being in the team and blocking Paul Caddis's progress? Yeah. Now, it might not have worked out, but it's the same principle, you know.
Yeah, completely. And the same with, well, Caddis probably reached more or less the same level. O'Day reached more or less the same level as Højvelds and Leuvens and whoever.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, you can go through, you know, quite a few players like that, where you're kind of wasting away your budget and not greatly improving the quality of your team.
So overall tonight, I'm not particularly disappointed. I'll probably feel worse tomorrow when the front page of the papers have a picture of the guy who ran on the park and the back page has 5-0. But I expected to get beat. Yeah, I'd have preferred it to be 3-0, but or 3-1, or I expected to get beat.
Well, after being beaten 5-0 about 10 minutes ago, I was talking about how Celtic are going to win the European Cup.
With a favourable draw. So we've got Ross County. We've got Ross. I mean, there's the difference, right? So we're now going to go and play Ross County. We've got, you know, we had offers in from Premiership teams for both Craig Gordon and Doris de Vries in the summer transfer window, and were able to knock both of them back. And we spent £4.5 million in Cham. We brought in Roberts, who, okay, he's on loan, but we were. But I think the loan deal, we spent £3 million on Roberts to loan him for one season.
Wait. Does that include wages, or is that separate?
I don't know. I just know that for a season, to bring him in for a season.
Because if it doesn't.
Yeah. But the point.
Yeah.
We're then going to play Ross County.
Yeah.
They couldn't spend £3 million on their whole team. So, it's a bit of the difference. So, what's your expectation? Are we going to rest people for. We're going for 55, remember?
But to be honest, then it goes. I remember saying this like throughout last season. I don't want to say I don't really care, but like, I don't really mind that much about losing the unbeaten streak. As we were talking about before with the young players, I would much prefer to see young players playing like as they played at Kilmarnock, and be giving these guys, say, 15 games in the league this season, resting players who are going to be playing in the Champions League and hopefully the Europa League until May. And they're going to be, you know, having about 60 games.
We've got Ross County Saturday, Dundee Wednesday, Rangers Saturday, and Elect Wednesday.
Yeah.
That's our schedule in the next 2 weeks. So based on that, I would not be... although, don't forget, they played a Champions League youth game But I wouldn't be surprised to see Calvin Miller play on Saturday. I wouldn't be surprised if Griffiths was rested on Saturday. Although, again, I suppose the option is Brendan might be looking at resting people for the away game in the League Cup against Dundee.
Well, everything, all of the kind of team planning, sorry to slightly interrupt you there, but everything to do with the team planning should just be focused on the Rangers and Anderlecht games.
Yes. Now,
whether or not we lose or whatever, it's something, for me, it's kind of something for the media and for like a casual fan. The really serious stuff is to get a result out in Belgium and to beat Rangers at Ibrox. And to have everyone at their optimum. And if that means making sure someone gets an extra amount of minutes, great. If that means giving someone a rest, great, whatever. However the players are feeling, however Rodgers wants, but the other games don't really matter for me.
I think the only thing to chuck into that is I think both Boyata and Dembele are back in training. Mm-hmm. So there might be an element of playing, if one of them's fit or both of them are fit enough, playing one or both of them on Saturday or certainly Wednesday against Dundee, but it'd probably be better if you could just so they've got had a game under their belt before going to Ibrox on the 23rd and then away to Anderlecht on the 27th.
Yep. And one last point, Edwards' contribution today wasn't great, to be honest.
No.
I don't think he retained the ball once.
No.
I know it's Paris Saint-Germain, I know he's not up to speed, but anyway.
Yeah. But maybe he's not a holding the ball up type person.
Yeah.
Anyway, so what's your prediction for the score on Saturday?
Ross County.
Mm-hmm.
4-0.
Excellent. I'll hold you to that. And with that, so just to let everybody know who's listening, it is now 10 to 1 in the morning and I sent Mark a text saying I'll be home just in time. Do you fancy coming on just for 15 minutes at 11:30 because I'm too tired to stay up past midnight tonight. So there we are, 10 to 1 in the morning, and I'm just finishing it and then I need to put it all together, so I'll be getting to my bed probably about 2. So if you're wondering why this isn't a very excited podcast, it's because I'm knackered. And with that, Mark, I will say you can now go and see to that dog and I'll speak to you later.
That's about a mile away, by the way. Anyway, hail. Cheers, Sam.
Yeah, it was obviously we're bitterly very disappointed first half. I thought that I think we spoke about in terms of being in a real positive attitude, a real aggression to our game, that we were, so defensively we were just too far off them and not tight enough and not close enough. And then secondly, I was disappointed in how we retained the ball. You know, from our midfield to front players, we didn't keep the ball for long enough. And if you do that against, like what you see, it's arguably the best team in the world at the minute that's been put together, then they will punish you. So we spoke about that at half time. Second half for that 30 minutes, and we were much better. At least the supporters who were brilliant for us on the evening, that were still pushing us, we were much better, much more aggressive, got into some good areas. And then, of course, we can see sort of 2 late goals, which puts a wee, takes a bit of the good play away from us a little bit. But you can lose with that scoreline. That team, they've been doing it, you know, over the course of the last 12 months, and in particular since the new guys have come in. But it was much happier with that first half hour of the second half. We were much more aggressive in our game, and then that allowed us to create more chances. So, but you have to also give credit to them. This is a team that's a really special team that's been put together, and they're going to be close to winning it for sure.
Okay. There's obviously a huge disparity in cash resources between the two clubs. What can you do, if anything, to try and bridge the gap between Celtic and clubs like that at this level?
Well, it's all you're going to do is bridge it. You're never going to you know, close it somewhat. You just have to. For me, the thing I said to the players at this level, you have to have the belief, and maybe a bit similar to last year, it might take us a game or so just to get into it again from getting into the competition to play, and then obviously we see that and recognise that the level that we're at, so you then perform better. And like I say, you have to. This is a level where you have to look after the ball, and you have to make the ball work for you. And in the first half, we didn't do that. We were playing like under 12s at times for me. So, but like I say, it's confidence, it's belief, it's, you know, we're obviously missing some decisive players as well that can help us at this level. But it's always going to be very, very tough. That's the reality of it. You know, I don't want to be too harsh on the players. This is, you know, this is the potential champions of this tournament that we're playing. And from where we're at, with all due respect, and where these guys are at in the club, it's not just one or two levels. It's three or four levels away beyond us. But what we always have to do is be competitive. And like I say, we weren't for that first period, but second half we were much better, and we showed the supporters that, and they acknowledged that.
Brendan, can I just ask your reaction to the fan that got onto the pitch? The fans made their thoughts on it very clear.
Yeah, I think their reaction said it all, really. You know, it's disappointing that, you know, any ground, any club, a supporter getting onto the pitch like that. So, it was bitterly disappointing. I'm sure the club will deal with that, whoever that person is, but it shouldn't be anything that we should see, especially, as I said, on a football field. So, I think the stewards and all dealt with it at the time, and I'm sure the club will deal with it. And like you say, the crowd and their reaction told you everything you needed to know.
Question sur Navas.
Do you feel Tony Ralston handled the occasion? I think he certainly squared up to Neymar once or twice, but how do you think he handled the whole occasion?
Yeah, I think overall for him as an 18-year-old coming into that, I thought he was excellent. In fairness, it was a difficult start for him early on. I think the first goal when Neymar scored, you know, we had the ball and he's on his way up the pitch, and then we concede the ball cheaply, and then he breaks away, and then his pace takes him in behind. But I thought overall he stood up to it. He had some great blocks, and like I say, the overall experience that Tony will gain from that will be huge. You know, he's played his first Champions League game against one of the best players in the world, and I thought in general he coped very, very well with it. So, I was very pleased for him, and that'll help and hold him in good stead going forward. No?
Any more questions?
Okay.
Thank you very much. Get home.
Translate the question in English. Beyond the victory, big victory, what are you most pleased with tonight? Is it the technical side of things, or is it something else? Well, first of all, I'm really happy with the victory. The most difficult thing here is to cope with the rhythm Celtic play at and the intensity they play with, and of course with the support they have with them. I think my team showed a lot of character. It was really a team effort, and they showed a very controlled approach to the game, which I'm very pleased with. We felt a lot of control tonight, particularly in the midfield, and particularly with Adrien Rabiot. So the question is, what do you feel about this? What do you feel about your midfield tonight?
La force de cette équipe.
Thank you. I thought we had a lot of strengths in the midfield. A lot of things were positive. We controlled not just the midfield, but all across the park. Front, back, of course the midfield was really in control. What I was really pleased with is the fact that we were in control with the ball and also without the ball. I'd like to stress it was really a team effort, and not just with the usual midfield, but also the people who came in later on worked really well. You asked me about Rabiot. I think he was really, really able. He's improving all the time, and games like this are really going to help him improve even more.
Bonsoir, Unai. Là, vous gagnez.
PSG, their last performance in the Champions League was a defeat, losing by 5 goals, as we remember. Tonight you win by 5 goals in a place where it's difficult to win with such a margin. Do you consider this as a very strong signal to the rest of the teams in the group and to the opposition?
Le club aussi, nous voulons apprendre des choses qu'il a passées pour l'histoire de la Champions League pour nous.
We did learn from the past, from what happened last year. We've worked really hard to improve things within the team. It's more, before everything is teamwork. Of course, there's been the mercato where we've improved the team as well. But it's more about work, all the people working together. As far as today's concerned, I'm really, really happy. And it's a mixture of happiness and calmness. We're really confident that we can continue on the journey we're set out on. Today is good for confidence. Today is good because we know that there will be more difficult times to come, and this is a good step forward to prepare for these difficult times.
Unai, bonsoir au fond. Deux petites questions. Est-ce que tout d'abord sur les gardiens, tu peux nous...
One question. First one is about the goalkeepers. Could you, are you able to announce tonight who's your first goalkeeper, Alfonso Trapp? And the second question is about why did you not decide to put on a third player towards the end to maybe rest Neymar or to do something like this? As regards the goalkeepers, I want to show confidence in all my players. Keeping the same goalkeeper is not a problem. I have confidence in both Alphonse and Trapp. As far as number one, it's all about confidence. I'm not interested in number one. Second question about the replacement. Yes, I did make a couple of replacements. I thought it was the right time for it. But the team was playing well, so there was no need for a third replacement, really.
Dernière question, s'il vous plaît.
I guess double question. Did you find that Mbappe was a bit disturbed in the second half, particularly after what happened and the supporters coming on the pitch and trying to kick him? Did you feel it had an impact on his play? And the second question is about your three front players. Do you think things are starting to gel and they're starting to really work well together? Kylian Mbappe is a very young player, but he has a little bit of experience, and nights like tonight's are going to just give him more and more experience. This is what he needs at the moment. He wants to become a great player. He's going to grow up into that role. I think he showed a lot of confidence tonight. Also, a lot of movement, to link to the second question, a lot of movement with the other players up front, very good combinations with the other two players. They've only played a few games together, so it's quite normal. The team is improving. The key is that the team is going to improve more and more.
Merci beaucoup.
Thank you very much.
Well, there you can see the podcast was supposed to last 15 minutes, and it ended up lasting quite a bit longer. Hope you enjoyed that with Mark and I. Hope it wasn't too whingy. I don't think it was all critical of the players. I hope it wasn't. It wasn't intended to be. I was just trying to just point out the reality of the situation. And we're going for 35 on Saturday. We'll do that. Anyway, don't forget, it's the Celtic Food Bank collection on Saturday at the Ross County game. It's the Foundation's Food Bank. So that's coming up. There'll be a podcast out again very soon with Michael McCourt, with a very special launch of the Hail Hail Trail that the Celtic FC Foundation are doing. So listen in for that. And for those of you who enjoyed the basketball podcast a couple of weeks ago, you may have seen the posters around Glasgow that the Glasgow Rocks season will be starting again on the 1st of October, so get along for that. If you've got any ideas for the podcasts, email in podcasts@celticunderground.net. Any music, this one is, was it Green Machine tracks, T-Rex, Mixdown, Pete Young can tell me better. Go on and have a look. My Green Machine. There we go. That's it. My Green Machine. Apologies, Pete. So that's new music in, with new music on the podcast, intros or cover versions, get the stuff in. And I will just say that's enough of my ramble. Good night, God bless, and shit happens. Good night.
If you want to be young, oh so clean.